It's time for some Monday morning quarterbacking here on Newstalk 1400 DWS. You can reach us at 356-9397. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line at 351-5357. Or you can email us at talk@wdws.com. Now, here are the Monday morning quarterbacks, Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our Monday morning quarterback session. Indeed, we have a lot of things to talk about today. There have been, Mr. Tate, there have been a lot of exciting weekends in sports over the years, but this one has to rank right up there, I think, with the combination of all those things that happened on the football fields on Saturday, and then this World Series thing is unbelievable. This is a one-in-a-lifetime experience to watch that. I must admit that I said 11 o'clock is my limit last night and turned off the television only to find that the Astros came back and just another barn burner. They now have, of course, a 3-2 lead. But I've got some stats here that they provided. We'll get into it a little bit later of all the records that have been set here, mostly home runs, and the pitchers are saying that ball is juiced.
Yeah, I know they're saying that, and you know what's also juiced? That stadium. Those balls hit the left field aren't going that far. Now, some of them went a long way, but I don't. Did I dream this? I got up at 6 o'clock this morning. The game was still going on, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Finished at 7:30 this morning.
5 hours and 17 minutes baseball game. What I want to know is, how was there another game longer than this? Of course, it was 14 innings back in 2005. The White Sox had a game in the world. But, my goodness, how could you have a longer game?
And the two teams together now have hit 22 home runs.
And I ask you, when you tell me that, what part did analytics play in that?
The analytics guys and women, whoever is figuring that stuff out, have now slit their wrists.
Bring in a new pitcher, bring in a fresh pitcher, and they brought in a half a dozen of them, and they just kept hitting them. Didn't make any difference. I guess even bullpen pitchers wear out at some point, and they've pitched an awful lot of innings.
Yeah, they have, and they got two more games to play beginning on the Tuesday night.
At least they have a day off. Huh?
Who's gonna pitch now? Well, I know who's going to pitch for the for the Astros.
They got
the big advantage here. They got the game advantage, and plus they've got Verlander ready to pitch. Five different players hit a home run in the game in a 10-inning game, 13-12 win. Gave them the lead of three games to two, including the Dodgers' two home runs. The team set the record for the most home runs in a World Series with 22. Put the total number of homers hit in the postseason at 101, the most in a single postseason. And Clayton Kershaw, remember how everybody says, now nobody can hit this guy, but he has, in the last few games of the regular season, started to give up the long ball a little bit. Well, he has allowed 8 home runs in the postseason. That's setting the record for the most home runs allowed in the postseason by one pitcher. It was the second game in a World Series history in which each team scored at least 12 runs. The first was in 1993, Game 4, Toronto beat Philadelphia 15-4. And this was, they've got this broken down by the ages of players. Now, there's so many players that are 23 and 22 years old have been hitting in most of these home runs. And that's the case here. And according to the Elias Sports Bureau Research, the only other World Series with homers hit, even with three players 23 or younger, was played back in 34, and some of those players were people like Joe Medwick, Hank Greenberg.
I want to meet the guy at Elias that does all this work. That's one geek I want to meet.
And Astros manager A.J. Hinch said, when I thought I could describe Game 2 as my favorite game of all time, I think Game 5 exceeded that and more. It's hard to put into words all the twists and turns in the game, the emotion, doing it at home in front of our home crowd, their last game, of course, in that stadium this season. But just exactly what you would expect to come to the ballpark with those two guys pitching, and just a perfect setup for a bunch of runs, right?
Yeah, you can imagine I Kershaw losing four-nothing lead and a 7-4 lead. It's hard to believe. But, he's had his problems in postseason before, and it's kind of hard to understand. I mean, he finished he was terrific during the regular season when he wasn't injured. But here he is having trouble again, and they're hitting him. That's the thing I can't get over. I mean, they're hitting him hard.
Yeah, and guys 5'6" are hitting him.
Man. That was a long home run, too. That was a legitimate.
That was over the train, wasn't it?
That was a legitimate home run. Boy, did he bomb that one. Altuve is a great player. That's all I can say.
He's the MVP in that league right now, isn't he?
The first five hitters in the Houston lineup had 12 hits. I mean, they're just bombing the ball.
Now we got one part of the game where the center fielder comes in and he makes a bad play. He kind of dives for a ball and goes all the way past him, all the way to the wall. A couple run scores. Another guy gets to third base on it. So, boy, he's the GOAT. Next inning, he hits a home run.
Yeah, Springer's a heck of a player. Yeah. He really is. And, what do you do in that situation? Everybody, he should have blocked the ball. Well, he dove for it. He missed it by an inch or two, and it got under his glove. I don't know what you say. I mean, you don't want to play safe, do you? I don't know. Maybe you should play safe with a man on first. Bellinger hit the ball, and they had just gotten a runner out at home, which took the man out of scoring position, but he was still in scoring position at first base when Bellinger hit it to the wall.
So it's if you have any thing you'd like to say about baseball, let us know. We're going to take our first break right here. We come back, and we're going to talk about Illinois. We're going to talk about the football game. And the column you wrote the other day, Lauren, was pretty interesting. You had a lot of stuff in there. You had a lot of
About
three different topics, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I think the main topic is just the fact that, the fandom is pretty well split. The Fighting Illini fandom is not happy. Now, more than just losing games, but the way things are being handled and thrown out the war chant this year, you saw the uprising there. I mean, how many people reacted to that? And I brought up Lincoln's statement, that a nation divided can't stand and cannot long stand. And I just wonder how split are we now as a fandom? What do you think?
I'm going to take a break first. We come back and talk about that. I want to talk about the homecoming parade.
That's part of it,
well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's take our first break right here and remind you that we want to have you jump in here at 351-5667, 351-5667. And the Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. Plenty to talk about, and we'd like to have you join us after we take this first break. All right, jump right in if you'd like on our Monday morning quarterback session, 351-5667. The Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. Let's talk a little bit about what happened over the weekend, starting on Friday night with the parade and the protests and the powwow that was held. I know you attended that. And then what happened in the football game. A lot of different things happened there, some of them good, some of them not so good. But your column was about what?
Well, I think, as I said, my column was about trying to find taking a split fandom and trying to find some kind of a compromise that between, we know we can't get Chief Alaniwik back, okay? That's gone. That's not going to happen, no matter what administration we bring. They're not going to bring Chief Alaniwik back. Therefore, we need some kind of a replacement, don't we? I think, and I don't like the idea of a mascot, so I thought this powwow idea was good because, number one, it's authentic. The problem with Chief Alaniwik is it's inauthentic in the sense it's a student masquerading or posing as a Native American and dancing and
people complain about the dance.
Okay, but you can't complain about the powwow dance because it's authentic and it's pretty good. I mean, I watched it, and I think the fans would like it, but You're always going to, no matter what you do, there is a segment, and I don't think it's a big segment, there's a segment of people who don't want to see the Native American culture in any way connected to athletics. So it's okay if you want to hold a powwow, you know, and on campus somewhere, but if you connect it with the football game, then they're going to be offended by that. Although there were no complaints about the powwow at First and Green Saturday morning. I didn't see any, no protesters, no complaints. Don't you think?
Some people were complaining that they moved it from Grange Grove over to across the street.
Right. They were upset. I mean, I don't know if I should say upset. There were people among the group. There were 38 Sioux, Native American Sioux from North Dakota here and made the trip here just for these four to dance, which they did. And it was an impressive thing, but the fact that the university, the chancellor's office, felt it was important that they move away from Grange Grove across the street, because Grange Grove reportedly, and they can call and tell me that I'm wrong on this, but I'm confident that the reason they did it was too closely connected to Memorial Stadium, and so they actually asked them to move, and they moved without an argument. There's just not a dispute. They agreed to move. When they were asked to move, they moved. And they held it. Now, the next thing they want to do, of course, is carry this to Grange Grove and then inside as part of the halftime. And that's a big step that probably will never be taken, I don't think. I don't think the university will allow it.
Well, the halftime is not all that long. I've talked to Barry Hauser about this before, you know, and some people were talking about shortening the length of a football game, and somebody said, well, we could shorten the halftime, you know, and he says, you know, it's not that long to begin with, and to have a dance of some sort, that wouldn't be over in the minute or so that 2 minutes that Chief Lanawick danced. Mm-hmm. It would be much longer.
Yeah, it would be. It's a problem making it fit, but I would say, Jim, and I didn't time it, but I don't think it lasted much over 5 minutes. Now it can be continued, but I think the original dance was the dance I saw was only about 5 minutes.
Okay, let's go to the phones and Tony. Hello, Tony.
Hello, guys.
How you doing, Tony? Day, huh?
Good. I organized the event with the powwow, so I wanted to weigh in on it.
Okay.
Concerning, you know, where it would fit in, and the reason that I got involved in this is because I'm a fan, and we used to have the most exciting 4 minutes in all of college athletics, and it's not true anymore. And, you know, if you want to solve a problem, you have to first define the problem, and the problem is the missing Native dance component during the 3-and-1. And so that's where it would fit in. We would, instead of having the chief do the dance, we would have Native Americans do the dance.
Tony, you think you could limit this to a couple of minutes to fit in with the 3-and-1? Because that dance that I saw Saturday was a little longer than 2 minutes.
Well, if you're talking, say, basketball, pretty much you have, you know, the entire halftime that if they wanted to go that route, rather than, you know, putting the Blues Brothers or something, you could just do powwow and then go into the 3-and-1. Football's a little more tricky, but if it's not an event that has, like, Dad's Day or something already, you know, pre-programmed, you could do like a grand entry and to a flag song, maybe keep it to 2 or 3 minutes and then go into the 3-and-1. So, totally doable.
You also,
and our fans would love it, and it would result in smiles and laughing and joy. And the only people that would not want it are those who do not want unity.
Well, I think there's
nothing more unifying than power.
Yeah, I don't think there is. I mean, that's a really good point. In moving from Grange Grove, this is something you agreed to on the recommendation of the chancellor's office. Is that correct?
I don't want to draw anybody out, but they told us that they couldn't stop us from doing it in Grange Grove, but it was going to. They didn't like it. They felt like that it was going to basically be the university condoning it, being a part of it. So we didn't give them any flack. I mean, we discussed it, and I ended up making the call that we'll just go across the street and the more important thing was just to get that the powwow culture to our fans. They've probably never seen the authentic thing, and my calculation has always been that if they saw it, they would love it. People were grabbing their phones and hugging people and just very appreciative of our Sioux friends who came. And so I just getting that out there to our fans was monumental feat. So now it's pretty much going viral on Facebook and stuff. And we want this to be the debate moving forward, because you're right, Lauren, the chief is never coming back. And my proposal has absolutely nothing to do with the chief, and it has everything to do with representing the Fighting Illini brand. And if you go back and look at the origins of the Fighting Illini, look at the archival information, it is clearly an allusion to the World War I veterans, and they also sought to attach the Native Illini. They saw the admirable qualities in the Native Illini, and they wanted to associate that to Fighting Illini athletics. So if you talk about a perfect representation of that, in powwow culture, they have military veterans, war veterans, march out the color guard, because Native Americans give great deference to war veterans because they're warriors, and it also celebrates Native American culture. So there you go. So rather than some goofy squirrel or something like that, the Fighting Illini is a serious name, so it requires a serious representation. If you're going to be the Gophers or the Badgers or something like that, that's not serious. So a goofy mascot on the sideline, but if you're going to be the Fighting Illini, that's a serious connotation, and it requires a serious representation.
Tony, when you say a proposal, have you actually proposed something like this to somebody?
We've met with the chancellor, and
what did he say?
My proposal was more broad-based. It was comprehensive. That would include an annual powwow and different events to celebrate the culture on campus, and pretty much he loved the entire proposal except for halftime. And he said pretty much that if there had not been a chief history, we'd be good to go. But my thing is, and I think that everyone needs to really think about this, are Native Americans banned from the athletic field in the post-chief era? Are Native Americans banned from the field at the University of Illinois? And I would have to say that the answer is yes. And to me, that's clearly racial discrimination. And that's why I believe that you will eventually see this on the field, because that is an immoral stance. There's no justification. Let me put it this way. There's never any justification for racial discrimination, and the chief affords no such exception.
Would you be trying to do this more than once a year? I mean, you said annual, or would you want to do it for every home game?
What I want to do is debut it. Just like the chief was debuted, no one had any idea that it would become a regular tradition. Debut it. Let Illini Nation weigh in. And the chancellor said in February, in an article by Julie Worth, he's looking for a new tradition that the alumni can wrap their arms around, that the majority can get behind. I'm telling you, this will have 90-some% support. It's not a pro-chief, anti-chief issue. Each side can equally embrace, the authentic powwow culture, but it's a choice. You can choose to hate and choose division and bitterness and continue that, or you can choose unity and peace. And this is that proposal. So I think that the chancellor will see the light and realize we're never going to get anything that there is 100% agreement. But if it's, the chancellor says the majority, is that 51%? Do we have to have 70, 90%? I think this is going to come in the high 90s. And, what does the opposition have on this? What is their argument against it, other than just wanting to continue their agenda of punishing our fan base? And that's what this is all about. They give Native American House this power. Pretty much if there's anything Native American, they run to them. Well, they have a political agenda. The NCAA set it up to where the arbitrator for who gets an NCAA exemption is not your campus Native American group, because they do. They're 19, 20-year-old kids that most of them have never lived on a reservation, and a lot of them do have a political bias, whereas the NCAA reserves that power to your tribe. So Chancellor Jones should be talking to the Peoria tribe as far as what will go and what's acceptable, because they live on a reservation, they have tribal elders, and they can speak objectively about this issue. And I tell you what, if the chancellor would put that focus there, Native American House, no other tribe, no other person can challenge their authority. And I'll tell you this, without naming any names, there is support for the authentic powwow culture with the Peoria tribe.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tony. Will you keep us informed about what's going on?
Sure will.
Okay, thanks. Thanks very much. Appreciate your efforts over the weekend. The people that I've talked to that were there, I fortunately was not, Lauren was there, but they really enjoyed it. In fact, years ago, I have seen powwows in the armory at the University of Illinois. Now, that's been a long time ago, and I don't know what they had an annual meeting. There were Native Americans from all over attended. I'd have to go back and look at the archives and find out when that was. But
Just real quick, this whole notion that Native Americans are offended by anything and everything Native American in sports, it's a big lie. It's a political agenda started by Charlene Peters. It comes out of far left-wing academia. If you take a look at the surveys of random Native Americans, it comes in 70, 80, 90% support this. And the empirical evidence is overwhelming because there are many, many instances where Native Americans have been brought in at halftime. My favorite one is the University of Tennessee. They do an annual thing to honor Native American Heritage Month in November where the actual Cherokee tribes get on the field with the band. So it totally destroys that notion. It's not true. Native Americans love to share their culture, and there is nothing taboo about the athletic field. That is just a big lie, and it's all part of a political agenda.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. We go to Pat. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Lauren. I would just like to say that I dittos to everything that Tony said. He was very articulate in how he portrayed Illini Nation. And for those of us that have been around here a long time, including you, Jim, and Lauren, I'm just getting more frustrated every year. And I'm not just talking about local people. We're talking about people all over the state and all over the country, for that matter, that follow Illini. First of all, Lauren, I want to tell you that I thought your article in the paper yesterday was really magnificent. I don't often read your articles twice, but I did yesterday. And when the time comes that the U of I is going to need an arbitrator/mediator for something like this, I think you're going to be right there, Lauren. That was excellent in how you portrayed that. I thought the picture in the News Gazette was magnificent. I'm sorry I wasn't out there to witness the dance. Typical of the U of I, even if you thought you were going to go to see it, you never know where the U of I is going to end up putting somebody because they're just spineless. And I'm so sick of the fact that we bring in these chancellors from all over the world that don't have a clue about our traditions and 87 years of Chief Illini Wick, and yet they're still going to harbor to the less than 5% of the people that are out there that are upset about this. And I oftentimes think back to the poor little girl over at ISR, Illinois Street Residence Hall, that was eating her dinner one night, and she was offended by a Christmas tree there. And so, boy, they had that tree down by morning. You know, I just...
Pat, listen, you bring up some good points. We appreciate the call, but we're running a little late on the news here at 9:30, so we're going to have to move on. But thanks so much for calling in. Appreciate you taking part. In fact, it's 9:33. Sorry, Brian, but here 3 minutes late because of us is Brian Barnard and the news headlines. Back after that with more of our Monday morning quarterbacking. Welcome back to our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here taking your calls at 351-5667. You can text us at 351-5357. And let's go to Rob. Hello, Rob.
Hi, Jim. Back in 2008, I happened to drive over to Peoria, or Miami, Oklahoma, to meet with the chief of the Peoria Tribe of Indians of Oklahoma. The chief's name is John Froman. And I wanted to ask him about the about Illiniwek. He said that his uncle had negotiated a contract with the University of Illinois that the Peoria tribe would strongly support Illiniwek as the symbol of the University of Illinois. And the provisions were these, that the University of Illinois had offered medical support to the tribe, and this is through University of Illinois, the medical school having sort of a satellite facilities at the Indian tribe, that they would work with the that the University of Illinois would work with the tribe to help create educational as well as medical as well as business opportunities, and they were thrilled. And he said, you know, your chancellor who had negotiated this did not have the courtesy of telling us that that they had run into problems with approval of this this contract. And he said, you know, this again was
who was the chancellor at the time, do you remember?
You know, I honestly do not, but it's probably pretty darn easy to pick it up.
Yeah, okay.
But,
go ahead.
Yeah, so the tribe, it's a small tribe, but it's real. And the tribe has a they survive with a casino, a hotel, and tribal governmental jobs. Those are about the only jobs that the tribe has. And I just think it's just horrible that the people from the University of Illinois had negotiated a serious contract with the chief. Now, Chief Froman is the nephew of the chief who had negotiated that. That man died of cancer. But Chief Froman said, you know, the insulting manner that the University of Illinois chancellor had treated them would make going back and looking at that contract again difficult. Well, you know, 7 years or so, or 9 years have passed. I think it's about time for our chancellor to get serious about revisiting contracts, or I would refer to it as a treaty between the state of Illinois, the University of Illinois, and the Peoria Tribe of Indians of Oklahoma. It's there. And my gosh, treating the Indians that came from central Illinois were forced out several times to ultimately live in Oklahoma. What a better thing than to revisit that contract and reinstitute the treaty that our university had arranged.
Okay, going to have to go, Rob, but thank you so much for supplying us with that information. Back to the phone calls in just a moment. Several emails. Thank you, Tony, for your efforts on the powwow. You have my support. Hope we can move forward on this. A great idea. And another, I am ready to turn my back on the University of Illinois. 40-plus years of fan and financial support is going to end. And a third, the protesters aren't students or even fans. The administration has got to listen and stand up to the few liberal employees whom they feel have the right to infringe on the rights of those who don't agree with them. Time to let some people go. That's George sent that in. We go to Al on the phone. Hello, Al.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I wasn't going to call in because Lauren scolded me last week for calling in.
No, I want to know what's wrong. What did the coordinators do wrong this week, Al? Come on.
No, I'm not going there. I missed my first game in over 40 years Saturday. I just I was disgusted with what I'm seeing on the field and the weather. But my comment is about the texter that called in and said the same thing. I'm tired of Al calling in. Well, I think the product on the field and the execution of what we see out there is self-evident. But this is the eighth week, and I've yet to hear one caller call in and say, wow, these guys are – they called a great game or they made great adjustments. I haven't heard that, and I wonder why. So maybe I'm not too off balance. But anyway, another subject, you probably don't remember this, Lauren, but I called in after we hired Beckman, and I said, I think we got the wrong guy from Toledo.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a nephew that's that went to Iowa State, and he goes to the games, and they absolutely love Chad Campbell. And what he's done over there is just got that town in a buzz. And
Al, they better start sweetening his contract right away, because that guy is really hot, and they'll be after him.
I agree. Well, he's out in the community, he says, and he mingles after football games with tailgates, a lot like Mike White did. He come by our tailgate several times after games, and that's kind of stuff. That's the kind of guy that you want, and just get the fan base excited again. But to the game, but having 12 guys on the field was ridiculous. And fourth and seven were kicking a field goal. Tuberville was critical of that too, and I just don't like what they're doing with the quarterbacks, jacking them around. And Jeff George even said so in the paper yesterday. It's kind of hard to get in the rhythm when you're in and out all the time. So anyway, I'm not going to blast the coordinators, Lauren. So those are my comments. I think the stats speak for themselves. So I'd just like to hear some guy call in and say, boy, those guys are doing a great job. So
hey, appreciate it.
And thanks for your show, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Al. We're at 351-5667. Text us at 351-5357. Yeah, the color commentator on television, he's talking about Tuberville, was very critical of several things throughout the game. It was not much fun to listen to them, so I turned them off and turned the radio broadcast.
Do you recall what their main concerns were? I mean, obviously the 12 men on the field was...
Yeah, that was, how can that happen was one of the things. And I don't remember exactly the circumstances, he was talking about the same play that Al mentioned there about, I believe, we tried a field goal there on fourth and seven or something like that. I don't remember the position on the location on the field, even. But they were just kind of negative, and they're talking mainly about Wisconsin and the fact that they were going to be one of the top four teams and so on. We need to talk about that a little bit too, about what's going to happen there. Fact of this week, Purdue is a 12.5-point favorite over the Illini. Northwestern is 1 over Nebraska. That's at Nebraska. Ohio 16 over Iowa, game at Iowa. Maryland is 1.5 over a game at Rutgers. Wisconsin 10 over Indiana, in Bloomington. And Michigan is 14.5 over Minnesota. That game is in Ann Arbor. And Penn State is 11 over the Michigan State Spartans in East Lansing. So, I don't know, people that were betting on Illinois in the last game won.
But you know what's interesting about this West race is so lopsided, was Wisconsin just running away with it. If they beat the three I's, they've already beaten Illinois, now they play Indiana and Iowa the next 2 weeks, they could clinch the thing with two games to go before they ever play Michigan. They could clinch the playoff spot. Now, here's my question for you. Let's say that they clinch it and lose to Michigan, which could happen. I think Michigan's about as good as Wisconsin. Excuse me for saying that, but I didn't think Wisconsin was very good. I mean, I shouldn't say it that way. They're a good football team. They're not close to Ohio State and Penn State, in my opinion.
Well, I think that's right.
I don't care where they're ranked. My point is that they could lose a game, and then if they upset Ohio State in the playoff, would they be in the Final Four? I guess they would, wouldn't they? One loss wouldn't knock them out, would it?
There's going to be a lot of teams with one loss.
Where does Notre Dame fit in this?
Well, Notre Dame is just sitting there watching those teams above them beat up on each other in these playoff games, conference playoff games, and they're going to be right in there.
I think so. I think it's really good. I mean, what they showed against Southern Cal made me think they're pretty good.
That's a good team. They lost one game to Georgia.
One-pointer.
Yeah, Georgia beat Florida by 40.
Well, Florida, I started to say Florida fired their coach today, but actually he just it's some kind of an agreement that he's reached an agreement, a contract agreement, and I think it's mutual. I think they wanted him gone and he wanted out, and so he's gone. So who's going to be the new coach at Florida?
Watch out, Iowa State.
That's a good point.
Let's go to Richard. Hello, Richard.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Morning.
You can hear me fine. Great.
Yes, sir.
I have a question and a comment about my question. How many targeting penalties have been levied against U of I this year?
Four.
Only four. I thought it was more.
I could be wrong. I think it's four. I mean,
well, no, I'm sure you're right, Lauren. Here was a thought that came to me during the game, and it seems to me that there could be more discipline, you know, instilled in the team. The rules, let's obey the rules and play hard. But one of the things that hit me was, you know, the fact that Lovie does not allow contact, serious contact in practice. You're not going to see a guy who may have a tendency in practice to target, to hit one of his own players like that, where you can then take him aside and school him and say, hey, look, you've got to get it in your brain that you can't lower your head like you're doing when you hit, Mikey Judek or somebody. But it's just a thought that hit me, and I'd like your comments on it. But
my comment on it is very simple. I think it's an accident when it happens. I don't think it's intended. I think guys go in and you tell them to tackle. They go after a guy hard. The other guy drops his head and they collide heads. I mean, it can happen. I don't know how you avoid it. It's going to happen. It happens everywhere. And it's too much of a penalty.
It's not a discipline lack. Well, we might disagree on that one. Here's one of the questions. On a conference level, where do we stand? Are we the most penalized so far for targeting? Where do we stand in terms of Ohio State and Minnesota and Iowa?
I don't know, but if there's 70 plays in a game and you're on defense, let's say you're on defense 70 times because you're on offense about 70 times, let's say, and you multiply that times how many games we play. This will be 7 games, 8 games, okay, so that's how many opportunities you have to have targeting, and you're complaining about four of them. I mean, that's too small a number. I mean, it's too happenstance. It's a guy coming in, it's a freshman by the name of Knight coming in there the other day, and starting the first game he's ever started, and okay. he hit a guy wrong. I mean, sometimes I saw the one where the guy spun around. I mean, they didn't even know where they were when they hit. I just don't think it's –
they've made their point on targeting, and I think it should be a penalty. But this business of making people lay out and so forth, you've made your point. Let's go back to this being a 15-yard penalty or something.
Helmets are going to accidentally hit against each other every now and then. It's going to happen.
They've been doing that a lot. If you want to see some targeting, you ought to watch the line play. I mean, those guys bang heads every play, don't they?
Yeah.
We need to take a quick break before we get too far behind here. We're at 351-5667, back after this. This is Monday Morning Quarterbacking. I'm Jim Turpin with Lauren Tate, and we go to Rick. Hello, Rick.
Yes, hi, Jim and Lauren. I know that you mentioned that you were going to get into this at the first of the show, and Lauren had mentioned it briefly in his column, but I was just wondering how the chief was received in the homecoming parade. Cheers or catcalls, or I know that the car with the chancellor was stopped, but just wondered how that all went.
Well, the protesters were all around the Honor the Chief Society float, or I don't know if you call it the float, but their group, I don't even know if he was in a car.
It was in a float, and I did not see it, but it broke up the parade.
Yes, it did.
It ended the parade at that spot. They had to break it up and go home.
Wow.
And my thought, Rick, is, and I'd like to hear yours, my thought is that the Honor of the Chief Society have every right to be in the parade. We've had all kinds of groups in that homecoming parade over the years, as you well know. They have every right to be there, and the anti-chief people have every right to be there as well. If they want to walk as a group with signs and that kind of thing, okay. But to protest and to break up a parade is arrestable, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, that's been the problem with some of the protests around the country, that they've complained that the police didn't do enough. Now, I know in a little parade like this and, a small police force and so forth, and nothing probably happened. Maybe they just tried to keep things from getting out of hand. I don't know, but you shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Well, I feel the exact same way.
Hey, got to go, Rick. Thank you. I'm glad you called. Well, we've had all kinds of things happen here. We're going into the final minute, going to break for the news at the top of the hour. Then we need to talk some football about this top four, Lauren. We talked a little bit about that a while ago, but right now it's Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and Wisconsin. And if things stay the way they are, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. Alabama will play Georgia, Ohio State will play Wisconsin in conference playoff games. Then what happens?
One of them will be, two of them will be eliminated. One each will be eliminated, I would say.
And there's Notre Dame. Well, they would. Wisconsin is undefeated. They would then have one break. Clemson has, and Penn State, of course, have one break or one loss as well. We'll talk more about that the second hour on WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. Welcome back to hour number two of our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. We're at 351-5667. The Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. And two or three text messages have come in. Let me start with those. Was watching Penn State and Ohio State, thinking, I don't believe the Illini will ever be able to compete at that level again. This is the worst Illini team I've seen. And goes on to say, but for Illinois' bonehead mistakes that kept turning the ball over Saturday, the team played pretty well against a top-ranked team. And the caller Rob says the chancellor that he spoke to, he was telling us about the negotiations that were made between the university and the Peoria tribe, was Richard Herman was the chancellor at that time. Well, the Illini basketball team won a game over the weekend, won an exhibition game down at Vanderbilt, have another one coming up, another exhibition game, a charity game, actually, down at Charleston on Friday night. Illini play an exhibition game against Eastern Illinois. The proceeds from the game going to the American Red Cross and its hurricane relief efforts. Both teams were granted a one-time NCAA waiver to play the game. It's the only exhibition game on the Illinois schedule in advance of the November 10th season opener against Southern at State Farm Center. Illinois and EIU have met six times during the regular season in each program's history, but the two schools, separated by an hour, haven't met since 2002. Bill Self was the coach then. They defeated the Panthers 80-68 on December 10th, 2002 in Champaign. This will be the first time that the Illini have played in Charleston at Lance Arena. EIU's gymnasium that holds about 5,400 people. And the tickets for the event went on sale at 8:30 this morning. They cost $10. They can be purchased at the EIU ticket office or call 581-2106. 581-2106 or online at www.EIUPantherTickets.com. This is a part of a doubleheader, the EIU women's team. And the coach there, of course, is former Illinois coach Matt Bolant, will play Indiana State at 4 o'clock. Doors will open at 3:30 on Friday. So I guess they beat Vanderbilt.
Yeah, evidently. Sounded like a 10-point win. Sounded like Frazier played well. Frazier showed up late for the game earlier against Indiana State and didn't get a play. And, of course, Lucas didn't play in the first game either, other than about a couple minutes, I'm told. And I understand Kipper Nichols played well yesterday, but I don't have really much information, and I'm hopeful to get some today when we all get together at noon. We're going to hear Whitman at 11:30, I guess, today. He's going to talk about maybe the new building that they're planning to construct, and then we'll hear Lovey at after lunch.
The new building that may or not be suitable for hockey?
No, this is the football. This is the addition.
Are you talking about the addition to the football?
Well, Jim, I don't know what he's going to talk about.
Well, there's all kinds of developments being proposed.
Right, good point. Yeah, I would.
The one downtown is the one that they hope would be good for hockey.
Yeah, well, there are a couple options that they're studying, mm-hmm. but it's still a major. I think it's in the studying point right now, and I'm not sure. That's what he's going to talk about today, but I am pretty confident that he's going to talk about the new building that's going to be directly south of the football practice facility that they have now. But back to the basketball game, it's hard to get information because it's a so-called secret practice, and we know in the last game, for instance, that Black scored 18, and I think Finke had 15, and we know those things, but it's sketchy. And in these games, the last game, they didn't shoot many free throws. I mean, they didn't shoot free throws except when you were fouled in the act of shooting. Common fouls were they just took the ball out of bounds. So, and substitutions, you know, when you try to talk about whether you won or lost, you don't know how the other team substituted. You don't know how you substituted.
Or did they have a limit on fouls?
Yeah, that's right. They might just let everybody play regardless. You know, they can do anything they want in these practices.
That's what happened down in Missouri, remember?
Yeah, Tillman had 7 fouls in that game.
In 13 minutes.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And another text message that came in. I heard of people jumping on cars at the parade. Why were there no arrests for criminal damage to property? Standing down again. Last year against Western Michigan, this year against Minnesota, I think, and again against Wisconsin, Illinois lost possession when the officials ruled fumble instead of incomplete forward pass. They didn't even review the last one. In all three cases, it appeared to me to be that the arm was going forward. I looked up the rule, the NCAA Rule 811, which states that once the arm travels any distance in the direction of the opponent's goal, no matter where the ball goes, it is an incomplete pass. Unless, of course, the passer is wearing an Illini jersey, says Bill. That's a tough call.
Well, yeah, I mean, the ball has to be in the possession of the in your hand when your hand goes forward. So they knock it out and your hand goes forward. That doesn't mean that it's a fumble. And I can't. I mean, those things are so close that the human eye can't call them. They have to go back and. We're seeing things on reviews, Jim, that can't be called by an umpire or an official. It's just impossible. It's a guess.
Yeah, it's tough. To be an official, how would you like to have everything that you do? How would you like to? I'm trying to put this in an understandable way of in defense of the officials that anybody in whatever job you have. Have somebody be able to question every move that you make And if they don't like it, they'll just show it on television several times to show that you were right or wrong.
Right.
It's tough.
Yeah, when it's bang, bang, it's just a guess. They do a pretty good job getting most of them right, but I'm telling you, I'm watching a lot of balls and strikes. It's driving me crazy. I mean, I just, last night, there were a lot of pitches that were called strikes that were balls. They just were, and there were strikes that were, I mean, both ways. It's just, I told you that Sports Illustrated did a research on it. Every pitch within 2 inches is called wrong 33% of the time. It goes into the thousands in the course of a year, thousands of missed calls. Now, I'm not saying it favors one team or the other, but the umpires are all different. They've all got a different strike zone. They got a different high-low strike zone.
But there again, we went for years without having a little box there to show.
That's right, and I can tell you from officials that I knew, and I knew some in Monticello because Dwight Wilkie over there arranged, he organized a lot of officials from Meese and different ones that Burgess and different ones that worked with him. And you know, he worked the Rose Bowl, and he worked Big Ten basketball, and he was right every time. And if you wanted to argue with him, he would tell you were wrong because he got it right. I don't know how he would handle it today by having his calls overruled by reviews. He'd have to change his whole approach. You just have to change your approach to, hey, I could be wrong, but this is the way I called it.
Let's go to Kathy. Hello, Kathy.
Hello there. Now, what I'm going to talk about, you may not want to talk today about, but I will kind of call back tomorrow. But we were driving the car that the Chancellor was in at the parade.
Okay.
And we were surrounded by protesters. As we came down through the parade, they were on each side of us. The police were trying to keep them away from the car. But when we turned on to Green Street, a whole mob of them came out from behind people watching the parade and surrounded us. Now, my husband tried to continue on the parade, and some jumped in front of us, and he hit them, but not, you know, but just barely touched them. But this whole thing has really exploded because now they want us charged with assault. It's just, they have shared it on a black, it's called Black Rose, Facebook page. They were videotaping the whole thing, and they've put this on there. They have put a picture of our car, our Facebook page, our names, a picture of our car. That has now been shared with groups like Black Students for Revolution, other black pages, Students Against Sexual Assault. What that has to do with it, I don't know. But it's just crazy. I felt sorry for the Chancellor and his wife. The police surrounded our car and eventually took them away in a police car. But Stephen Kaufman came up and stood next to the car, laughing and telling the Chancellor, these are your students, and laughing about it. I had to scream for him to get away from the car because I was afraid of what I might do to him. The police came eventually, made him back up. But this whole protest was not organized by students. I don't believe that because the girl videotaping the whole incident had a video recorder that would not have been, a student I doubt would have had something that expensive. It was well planned. It was just unbelievable.
Could you tell me if anybody was arrested? Did you say the police took them away? What do you mean, they made them get away, or did they actually arrest them?
Because what we have been told is that they didn't want to arrest them because that's what they want. But we have talked with our attorney, who has talked to the state's attorney, because they are saying we should be arrested. And the state's attorney has said she has reviewed the video and there's absolutely nothing in there that we did wrong. So that's a relief. But the fact that all these people on Facebook are sharing our Facebook page, our names, our license plate number, it makes me fearful. And that's what these people want. I must say that the Chancellor's wife were just phenomenal people. I really, really enjoyed having them. His wife especially was enjoying the parade. She said, this is my first parade. I'm really enjoying it. And then all hell broke loose, and they just surrounded us. And then there was a lot of police that showed up. There was police around us on bicycles as we came down Wright Street, trying to keep the people, keep those protesters away from us. I wish that the police had made them get on the sidewalk because the people there for the parade, and there was a lot more than last year, were unable to see the parade because of these protesters between them and us. Now, the president was in front of us, and I believe in front of him was the football player they were honoring. I just lost his name, but
Brandon Lloyd.
Yeah, they were after the chancellor. But I also talked to the guy who had the chief on his car. Now, the chief started walking, and he told me that three people were assaulted by the protesters that were in the Honor of the Chief Society group that was walking. Now, I don't know any more than that.
What do you think's the upshot of this? I mean, where does it go from here?
I don't know. My concern is what they're saying about us. If you go in on their pages, their web pages, they see this black rose. It's called Black Rose and then Rosa Negra, Central Illinois. So they're all over the country. She's the one that posted all this information about us, is putting out false information about how we plowed through them, tried to run them over, and that her post has been shared. I asked Facebook to shut it down, and all they did was shut me down from seeing the post, which makes absolutely no sense. But it definitely was organized by somebody other than the students. I truly believe that. But the fact that Stephen Kaufman was right there as it was happening tells me a lot, too. That man should be banned from campus. I mean, and I think the chancellor should never talk to him again. I mean, he should never have any say at anything that happens on campus.
Well, every time they have a board of trustees meeting, he is there. If that's one of the topics that they're going to talk about, he's been doing that for years. And I guess it's okay. Most of the time, they don't respond to people anyway there. But you're quite right. I thought he was retired from. He's a professor emeritus now, I believe.
Yes.
And
he is.
But he's. That's still number one on his priority list is the chief.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Kathy, you have your own attorney, and you said you've already, the state's attorney has already ruled on this?
Well, Steve Beckett is our attorney.
Okay.
A good friend, so that helped. He has talked to Julie over the phone because he's out of state, but she has said there is nothing in there that they will see, but you can even see them pushing a policeman onto our car. You can see them laying on top of our car. And of course, it's a brand new Corvette, so we were not happy about that. My husband was about ready to get out of the car, and the chancellor kind of held him back and said, please don't get out, which made sense. We shouldn't get out. But the police then came and escorted him to a police car, and then they kind of surrounded us and let us back up and go down Wright Street, but the band was behind us. They routed the band around behind the alma mater and out into the parade route. So the parade route continued because our Corvette Club had 25 cars in the parade with homecoming people on it, like the court and stuff. Now, some of the court members even did signs when they got on the car and then held them up saying, not our mascot, on the cars of the people that were driving them. We aren't allowed to have anything with the chief on our cars, on our person. We have to wear the shirts they provide. But we were upset that these people then protested on our cars.
Was that the end of the parade, or you're part of it, or did you go on to the pep rally?
No, we couldn't. The rest of the parade behind us did. The president's car was able to continue on, and that was him and one other car. We were the only ones that were not able to continue because until they took the chancellor away, we were surrounded and couldn't move. So then we backed up and got out of the parade, and the protesters then ran over to Matthew Street and yelled at people and stuff, like the president and stuff. But
well, where was the chancellor in relation to the chief's float or car?
The chief was buried back. He was the last event, in the parade, and we were the third one in the parade. So between us and the chief were 24 other Corvettes. You know, the Clyde to the horses. My concern was that the protesters might spook those horses and something might happen. That didn't happen, I don't believe. But there were also other floats and things like that. So they continued on, but they were held up for a long time until they were able to get us out of the parade, and then the protesters dispersed.
Kathy, thanks very much for all that information. I'm sure our news people will be interested in that if they didn't know already. But I appreciate your call. Thank you. Quick break here, Mr. Bond. We're coming right back. Callers, please hold on. It is 10:30 and time for the news headlines with Brian Barnhart, back with more of our Monday morning quarterbacking, and back to the calls after the news. This is a Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. And we go to Jeff. Thank you for waiting, Jeff. You're on.
Hi, gentlemen. I kind of humbled by following the lady who was speaking just before me. I do hope that I'm glad to hear that she's okay, and I hope that she continues to be. I'll just leave it at that. My heart goes out to her. The reason I wanted to talk to you guys is I wanted to discuss the basketball recruitment situation from last week. I have not read two accounts of what happened that say the same thing.
Exactly.
I was wondering if you could enlighten me a little bit, because first I read that that Illinois rescinded their offer to Talen Horton Tucker because of pressure from people close to Io DeSumo. Then both players supposedly denied that. Both families were quite upset, apparently, with that. Both players said they didn't know where it was coming from. But the upshot of it seems to be that Simeon's coach is now quite annoyed with Illinois. It seems like the upshot of it is Illinois is coming out looking like the bad guy yet again. And do you guys know anything that you can share with us as to what happened here? And
I think your explanation for it's really good, because everybody's given different opinions now. I mean, the mother says absolutely that he had not committed to Illinois. Well, okay, if he hadn't committed, I'll go along with that if she says that. But they thought he was coming, and certainly the Iowa people with the Irvins thought he was coming to Illinois. They thought it was a done deal, whether it was or not. She says it wasn't. And she said he talked to all three coaches that he was involved with at that time and the next day. I do know that that Underwood went to Chicago on Tuesday and called off practice in order to go up there, and I assume to try to bring some peace between the two. The fact that those two organizations are warring is not a secret. I mean, from the moment he left that team in the summer, I'm talking about Talen Horton Tucker, left the team, left the Urban team, and left AO, and went to another team, the Rose team. We have a record of that. We know that happened, and we know that he blew up after that he really played well. So I think that basically Illinois got into a position where they realized, I don't know how it was worded, I don't know how it was said exactly, but I think that Illinois had to basically let him go. That's what I think. Now, I don't know how to explain that exactly. I think that there were too many things weighing in, particularly the Okoro thing at Normal, where Io is close friends there and the fathers are close friends, and they think they're going to get this big center out of Normal, and there are just a whole lot of other things that weighed in on it that I don't know what to say much.
Do you think, Lauren, that that they came out the way they wanted to? In other words, if they had to choose between Io and Talen Horton Tucker, would they have taken Io? My gut feeling is that they probably would have.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they had already taken him. They had one in the bag. You're not going to give up one when the other one hadn't signed or officially committed. Yeah,
right. Because again, what I was hearing was that Io was supposedly going to decommit.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't think he was going to decommit, but I do think that you would have broken your relationship with the Irvins. Whether he might have decommitted, you had to run that risk. had Horton Tucker came, had he committed, but I don't know. I mean, this got so messy. I mean, you've got Horton Tucker dating Io's sister. You got the families involved. You got the fathers on both sides. You got the mothers on both sides, and they're all denying everything now. And
that's right. And
how are you know, who knows what the actual, this thing changed. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday were all different days, and we had different reports each day.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate the call, Jeff. Thank you so much. We've had a couple of text messages here regarding the basketball game down at Charleston. One said that he tried the website and couldn't get on there, that it was busy. And another said he was wasn't able to get on the website, but was able to get tickets on the phone. The phone number is area code 217-581-2106. Now, this is not a very big place, about 5,400, and tickets went on sale at 8:30 this morning. It would not surprise me that if it's pretty much sold out before, sometime today, if it isn't already, because counting all the people down there that, oh, my goodness, we got a chance to have a University of Illinois playing here in Lance. That doesn't happen.
First game under Underwood.
And we got, people down in Sullivan and Arcola, Tuscola, people
they might come from
halfway down there, and so I don't know. That's all I know about it. And if we get any word on whether the tickets are still there or not, we will pass that along to you. Well, as you prepare for year end, consider potential tax moves. Professionals at Busey Wealth Management share several things to have you consider to end your year right. One, set aside time to plan. Procrastination can lead to mixed tax savings on December 31st. Two, defer income to next year, especially if you may be in a lower tax bracket in 2018. Look for opportunities to accelerate deductions. Itemize deductions. Make payments for deductible expenses, qualifying interest, and prepay state taxes. Know whether you are subject to the alternative minimum tax. It has its own rates and rules. Deferring income and accelerating deductions can have a negative effect. Bump up withholding to cover a tax shortfall by increasing your withholding via the W-4 form for the remainder of the year. Maximize retirement saving contributions to traditional IRAs and employer-sponsored plans while also reducing your taxable income. Get help if you need it. There's a lot to think about when it comes to tax planning. Busey's financial professionals can evaluate your situation and help determine if year-end moves make sense for you. Call 1-800-67-BUSEY or visit busey.com. 10:43, back after this quick break. We're back in our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here taking your calls at 351-5667. The Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. A lot of people interested in the game Friday night down at Lance. We're trying to find out what the ticket situation is at the moment, if we can, before the show is over. And somebody asked here on a text, will BTN Plus, Big Ten Network Plus, be carrying the game? I would not think so. I doubt if they would be carrying any exhibition games. And let's see what else we have on there. I really enjoy your show. Here's an idea for shortening baseball games. Go to 3 balls and 2 strikes.
That's a good idea.
How about just 1 pitch?
Well, you know, in softball, you start out with 1 ball and 1 strike. Maybe they should do that.
The traditional, instead of the traditional 3 and 4, it would create more hitting and less long counts. there would be less pitching changes because the pitch count would be lower. Well, it definitely would be.
Boy, they got themselves in a bind on trying to slow the, these games are just really lasting too long. The game ended at what, 12:17?
5 hours and 17 minutes.
Yeah. It's crazy. Just think, if you were watching in Ohio, the game ended at 1:17.
The only people that got a break on that were the people on the West Coast, I guess.
Huh? Yeah, well, yeah, they got a little break, but my goodness, these games are just ridiculous. You just ought to, you know, it's kind of like you ought to just wait 2 or 3 hours and then tune in and watch the game. You see it all right there.
I thought last night, I said the only time to watch these World Series games are either the first inning or the last couple of innings. Because the first inning, a lot of the things have happened.
Yeah, that's right.
And the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, everything has happened.
It's crazy. All these relief pitchers that were so effective and so outstanding, dominant, all of a sudden they're just getting knocked around.
That's all they talked about before this final series was started was the Dodger relief pitching.
Mm-hmm.
How
great it was.
You know, it's just you better get a lead early on the Dodgers because when they bring those guys in and then when they bring in that closer, well, big closer got.
What was it? Now, Jim, it was almost nearly 100. They had one loss. I mean, leading after the eighth inning, they had one loss all season and had 90-some wins or something.
There was one guy, Morton, I believe his name is, that said that he did not give up a home run all year. Everybody gave up a home run in this thing. I wanted to mention that tonight down at the Esquire, they're going to have some special guests and the Sports Writers Show down there. Parkland Volleyball continued to roll this weekend. They had three wins. Their record is 46-1. And their coach, Cliff Hastings, will be there about 5:30 tonight. He's going to bring the whole team with him. So
that's great.
That'll be fun. We don't give them enough recognition for what they've been able to do, in not only in volleyball but in several sports out at Parkland. They've got really a great program going there. Well, you know what we didn't talk much about today? Illinois and Wisconsin.
No, there was, you know, that was kind of a, I don't, was it a dull game? I mean, it wasn't a lot of exciting plays. Illinois showed good defensive skills early, and then as the game went on, they became less able to stop Wisconsin. But it was still a relatively low-scoring game. And, you know, Wisconsin defense has been underrated for years. I had a statistic, and I probably don't have it anymore. I can't remember, but I think it was the last 34 games, they allowed more than 24 points once. Now, that's pretty and I'm talking about regulations. There were overtime games that went beyond that, but basically they just they just been able to stop everybody, and they're in every game. Wouldn't that be great if you were in every game? If you knew you were going to be in. Now, that's the problem here. Illinois is losing by big margins game after game.
Let me interrupt you here, Lauren, because we do have Tom Michael on the phone.
Oh, good.
Hey, Mr. Athletic Director at Eastern Illinois University, Tom Michael, how are you?
Well, Jim, it's good to hear your voice. I am doing great.
Well, Lauren Tate and I are here where we have a program called Second Guessers. No, it's called Monday Morning Quarterbacking. I had the wrong name there. Tom, real quick, can you tell us anything about the tickets? We've had two or three people that had difficulty on getting them. They got them on the phone okay, but I guess on the website they were having trouble. Or are you selling a lot of tickets, or do you know, or can you help us?
Yeah. No, I can give you just a quick update. Our online system hasn't handled the demand for this particularly well this morning. But the walk-up and the phone sales have been just great so far this morning. We had people standing in line when we opened up this morning. Obviously, there's a huge amount of interest in it. You know, I think we're anticipating that it's going to sell out here pretty quickly. Not sure, you know, it could happen by the end of the day. Not sure on that, but certainly keep trying. That would be my advice for the folks that haven't been able to get through or are having some difficulty. Yeah, we're excited about Friday, and certainly it's always good to get basketball season rolling too.
Well, you got a doubleheader there, and the women play, and Matt's team will play Indiana State at 4, and then you're going to open the doors up about 3:30, and then the other game will follow. And $10, a great cause. These charity games are popping up all over the country. It's great for everybody. It seems like a win-win for me. It's great for the teams to get to play, and it's great for the people that are recipient of the ticket sales.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you, Jim, and certainly the devastation that happened here a couple months ago with the hurricanes and everything that's taken place in different parts of our country, to be able to kind of circle the wagons in athletics to raise money and do a good cause for that. That's something that's awfully exciting to be a part of. And then certainly it's a great opportunity for the teams, as you said, to get a chance to play, for us to be able to go out and hopefully provide an environment that's really exciting for college basketball. And, you know, we open up at Nebraska. So for our team, to be able to be exposed to a Big Ten team is great for us. And, you know, I know that, I'm sure that Brad and his staff want to be able to get some more feelers out on their new system and what they're trying to do. And hopefully we can provide an environment that doesn't make it particularly easy for them. And they'll be ready to open up the season and have a great year, too.
Well, Tom, just very quickly here to wrap it up. First of all, we appreciate your time. And thanks a lot. Would you recommend that people go to the phone, or is your website still up? It's just having trouble, or what should they do?
Yeah, the website is still up, but it can only handle so many at a time.
Okay.
I think the phone system has been working great, and I would just suggest keep trying to get through there, and if you can refresh on the website, that helps too. But we haven't had any problems. As you know, as soon as we get off one line, another one's ringing, and you know, we've got several lines going. So we're trying to accommodate this as best we can, and certainly excited to hopefully have all the tickets sold before Friday, which I expect that to be the case, and have a good environment here.
I bet you sell out before 5 o'clock. What do you want to bet?
Well, I do too. I hate to say that and us not be able to do that, but I think that that's our anticipation, that we'll be sold out by the end of the day too.
Okay, thanks a lot, Tom. Always good to talk to you. Appreciate it.
Hey, you too, Jim. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Quick break here. We're coming right back. Well, Mr. Tate, our time is up this morning. What do you say we do this again the next Monday?
I'm all for it, and we'll be talking about something probably other than the Chief and the powwows, and we'll have something else this next week. We play Purdue in a big game Saturday, Jim. That's a big one. We'll have the Friday night basketball game, too.
Yeah, that both of those will be fun to talk about, and thanks very much for all the calls this morning, and those of you that sent us text messages. That's what we like, it's a little dialogue on the show here on WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. We'll talk to you again next Monday. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock on Penny.